Morning. Today's Av Menachos Sadi Vav. We are in Sadi Hamid Beis. We're at the two dot stores of Bam the Abban. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kol Maasim Bifnim. In the 11th parak of Menachos, we are discussing Lechem upon him in detail. And the discussions that we had yesterday, a lengthy discussion in the Gemara yesterday about the Lechem upon him in the Midbar. Because there were times where the Mishkan was just simply disassembled. And when disassembled, is the Lechem upon him now going to be psul through the psul of Yotzei? Good, so that was a good part of yesterday's daf yesterday. The Mishnah on Sadi Heimud Beis, which we started yesterday, also detailed exactly when and where the Lechem Apanim was prepared and when and where the Sheah Lechem was prepared. So as far as the Lechem Apanim is concerned, so the Mishnah says that Lishasim v'arechasim v'chutz v'afiyasim b'fnim. It's baked inside, meaning in the Azara, and it's not Dochas HaShabbos, and it's not going to override the Shabbos. And as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, that is the most confusing line of the Mishnah, where it's going to be baked inside, but it's not going to override the Shabbos. So that means that what? It's going to be baked now on Friday, inside the Azara, in a Kli Shares, which means that it's going to be imbued with Kedusha Saguf, but it's not going to be put on the Shulchan tomorrow. You know what happens tomorrow morning? It's going to be passed through Lina. And so this is a basic issue of understanding the Mishnah. The Gemara was so bothered by this issue. The Gemara basically said, like, it seems to be a near impossible problem to solve for. Okay, the Rav Ashi gave a suggestion in yesterday's daf, to which the Gemara basically said, even Rav Ashi's suggestion is not a suggestion. It's not something which we look at as the actual solution. And so the Gemara basically leaves us off with, it's hard. It's really difficult to understand. In the meantime, however, parenthetically, the Rambam follows like the Mishnah as well, even though the Gemara came up with no solution of how to understand it. Okay, anyway. We are at the Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kol Maasim Bifnim. Everything is done inside. And then what the Mishnah ended off with is a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in terms of whether everything was done inside or everything was done outside. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Kol Maasim Bifnim. So Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana Shnei Mikra Chadarshu, and both the positions in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, seemingly are going to be contingent on how to understand a pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. Shmuel Al Perek Chaf Aleph. So David is on the run. Okay, he and his father-in-law did not have the best of relationship, and it started off okay, but in other words, it just soured very quickly. Certainly at the point where Shaul realized that the next king of the Jewish people is going to be David HaMelech, and Shaul was sitting on the throne, and okay, so it led to an uncomfortable relationship between them, and by uncomfortable, I really mean Shaul wanted to kill David. But all details aside, so David is on the run, and he goes to Nov Ira Kohanim. And in the city of Nov, which was the city of the Kohanim, which was the temporary resting place of the Mishkan. Remember, now we're between Shiloh and the Beis HaMikdash. Shiloh now has been already destroyed. Shiloh has been around for 369 years, but now that's destroyed. And the Beis HaMikdash is yet to be built. That's going to be done by David's son. So we are now in these intermediate years, where right now the Mishkan is currently situated in the city of Nov. It's called Nov Ir HaKohanim because that's where the Kohanim resided, because that's where the Mishkan was. Also, so far so good. And now David is getting to the city of Nov, and he looks there for refuge, and he looks there for food. He's starving. And we'll talk about how starving he was in just a moment, but he's there for refuge and food. And the Torah goes on to describe how he makes a demand to eat, and what is he looking to eat? So the Navi over there describes where he's going to eat the lechem upon him. Now, oddly enough, I don't know how to explain this better, but there was no other food to be consumed. Okay. Anyway, so he demands the lechem upon him, and they give him the lechem upon him. And there's some dialogue over there in the Navi, which, quite frankly, is difficult to understand. And so what we're going to try to do in the next couple of minutes of the daf is we're going to try to navigate through some of the more difficult dialogue that takes place in the Navi. So the pasuk goes on to say, Now, I can translate the words, but it's really hard to understand exactly what was stated. It's derechol, it's mundane, and afki hayom, even if today, ikadish bekli, even if it was sanctifying a vessel. Now, this is a description of the lechem apanim, but it's really not clear exactly what's meant in this pasuk. And so what we're going to have now are basically two different versions of how to understand the pasuk. Rav Yehuda savar b'chol ashkechino deka'afu. So Rav Yehuda says that when were they baking the lechem upon him b'chol? Meaning on a weekday, meaning Friday. It was Friday. And the kafule amr lehu derechol kafisu le afki ayom ikarish bekli ifso le belina. And to which what David says is that if you were to bake it today, even if we were to makash it in a kli, it would become disqualified with lina, which means that the according to Rav Yehuda's understanding, the it should not be baked on the outside. It should not be baked in a kli chol, because if baked outside, it's now going to be imbued with kedusha, and it's going to be disqualified with lina. Meaning that really, what should be done, it should be baked on Shabbos, in the azara, in a kli sharis. That's Rav Yehuda's understanding of the pasuk. And Rabbi Shimon says, "No, b'Shabbos ashkechin tika afulei." Rabbi Shimon says, "No, that the starting point was is that the meeting between David HaMelech and the Kohanim of Nov is that he sees them baking it on Shabbos." So David is chastising the Kohanim, and David is saying to the Kohanim, "You shouldn't have done it today," meaning you shouldn't have baked it today, but rather midi tana mekadesh shulchan hu demekadesh. It's not the oven that's imbuing it with kedusha; it's the shulchan that's imbuing it with kedusha. And so therefore, you should have been baking it yesterday on Friday. Period. Okay, so we have now two different versions of the Tanaim in terms of how to understand the Pasuk, and at least this is now the proposal of Rabbi Abahu, that this is the entire machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, all predicated on how to understand the exchange between David and the Kohanim.
At this point, the Yehuda holds that the Shabbos you make it?
Rabbi Yehuda says that you bake it on Shabbos.
He did not argue on that.
Huh?
Well, in the Mishnah, he did not argue on that.
Okay, but the Gemara is understood, but the Gemara's understanding is that you have to bake it inside, since you're baking it inside, and since you're imbuing it with Kedusha Saguf, so therefore you have to be baking it on Shabbos. Because if you bake it before Shabbos, it's going to be possible with Lina. You're right, it doesn't say it beferish in the Mishnah, but that's the Gemara's understanding. Now the Gemara says, now all this is good, but difficult. The pasuk says, "Vayitin le'akoin kodesh kilo hayasham lechem ki im lechem apanim hamusarim lufnei Hashem." Now, what bothers the Gemara now is that if you just read a little bit more in the Navi, it seems pretty clear that the confrontation, the meeting over here, took place on Shabbos. There doesn't seem any way around it, because the pasuk that we just read says that the only food that was available was the lechem apanim, as we described just a couple of moments ago. And if you read carefully the end of the pasuk that we just cited, it says hamusarim lefnei Hashem. It was taken off the table. Now everyone's in full agreement that the lechem apanim is taken off the table on Shabbos. So clearly, this exchange between David and the Kohanim took place on Shabbos. So now that we are left with only one way to explain the pasuk, ela mai derechol deka amr lehu hachi ka amr le. So the Gemara says, so what exactly was meant by derechol? Meaning that was the beginning of that first pasuk that we cited, which quite frankly was difficult to understand. So the Gemara says, lek alechem ki im lechem apanim musarim lefnei Hashem. So here's how to understand the exchange. Kohanim say to David HaMelech, I understand what you're hungry, but we don't, right now currently only have one thing to eat, and that's the lechem apanim, which we just took off the shulchan. But of course, you're not a kohen, you're not entitled to eat it. So amr lehu, so he says back to them, he says, are you kidding me? The lechem apanim, that's easy for me to eat. Look, consider. Now again, lechem apanim can only be eaten by kohanim. But in terms of making an argument, the lechem apanim that you just took off the table, is it subject to me'ila anymore? The answer, of course, is no. It's not subject to me'ila. Now granted, it can only be eaten by kohanim, but it's not subject to me'ila. Once kohanim can eat the lechem apanim, certainly it's no longer subject to me'ila. It just happens to be that it has kedusha and can be eaten by the Kohanim, but only by the Kohanim. But look, Rav David HaMelech says to the Kohanim, I'll go even one step further. El afilu haich nami da'ayom yikadosh b'kli havalei d'lecho. I can even demand from you right now the lechem apanim that you're putting on the table right now. The lechem apanim that you're putting on the table this Shabbos, which is obviously the replacement for the lechem apanim that you're taking off, even that I'm allowed to eat. And why am I allowed to eat that? Even though right now, currently, that is certainly subject to me'ila, because right now, I'm starving and I'm starving to death. The Gemara goes on to say, Havale delecho, misukan hu. Because as far as David HaMelech is concerned right now, he wasn't just starving, he was starving to death. Rashi over here writes on the very top of Sadivav Amin Aleph, Sha'achzu Bomos. So David HaMelech was suffering from some form of a starvation condition, right? In Greek, it's referred to as bulimus. I'm sure that the modern medical term of bulimia is connected etymologically to the word bulimus. Anyway, so he was starving to death. Vitzanan, and Rashi quotes the Mishnah, Mishach so bulimus ma'achil noso achi oro enav. Afilu biyuma kipurim biyuma beperik basra. The last parak of Yuma, the eighth parak of Yuma. The Gemara over there says that if somebody is suffering from bulimus, so you feed him on Yom Kippur. Meaning, it's a mesukan, it's a kanus nefashos, pikuach nefesh. And so therefore, David HaMelech says, I can eat that lechem upon him, the one that you just took off. That's what he meant when he said derechol. Meaning, what does that mean? It's mundane. Meaning, relative to the lechem upon him that's going on the shulchan today, which has more kedusha, because the lechem that's going on today is going to be sitting on the shulchan, subject to me'ila, until you take it off a week from now. So in other words, the David HaMelech says, I could even eat that bread, this bread that you took off, for sure I'm allowed to eat. In other words, give me the bread. Now, as far as now the machlok between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, so now we no longer have an explanation. We thought, going into this discussion, that it was all going to be predicated on how to understand the Pesukim in Shmuel Aleph. And now, no longer is that going to be the source of the machlokas between the Tanayim. What is the machlokas predicated on? The Gemara goes on to describe. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, B'Gemara Pligi, so what they're arguing about is Gemara. And when the Gemara says Gemara, the Gemara means tradition. Halach l'moshe misinai, if you will. Dekanami diktani, in fact, it's very clear. Because Rabbi Shimon omer l'olam have a ragal omer. Look at the language of the Mishnah. Look and read carefully how Rabbi Shimon says it. He says, "La'olam have a lomar." Get familiar. Get used to saying this. Remember yesterday when we read the Mishnah, I commented yesterday. Right, it's a strange way to say it. Just, on a daily basis, make sure you say this again and again. Right. Because for him, this is Mesorah, this is a tradition, and so, Torah Shabbat Peh, so you repeat again and again until you get it down by rote. And so, it is, in other words, the Machlokas over here has no basis in a Machlokas in how to explain Chumash, how to explain Navi. Now, it's not a Psukim-generated Machlokas, but rather it is simply a question of Mesorah. Rabbi Shimon had one Mesorah, Rabbi Yehuda had another.
In terms of David HaMelech's argument for Me'ila and Sakana, if there was no Sakana in Me'ila, why is he concerned about Me'ila and not karet for eating?
There's no karet.
There's no karet for eating?
No. And even if there was, in other words, he's
Sakana. If there was no Sakana, he would not be able to eat.
Of course.
Why is he coming concerned about Me'ila?
It's not a concern. He's just contrasting. He's just simply saying that the bread that you took off is not subject to Me'ila. In other words, and the bread that's still on is subject to Me'ila. And right now I could eat both. He's just simply contrasting the two breads. That's all. We start the Mishnah here on Sadi Vavam and Aleph. And the Mishnah now describing the Kohen Gadol's daily mincha, which we already discussed extensively before. So but here, as long as we're discussing order of operations in terms of how it is kneaded, shaped, and baked, so when it comes to the Chavitim, the Kohen Gadol, it's kneading, shaping, and baking are all done in the Azara. V'chdochas is a Shabbos, it's going to override the Shabbos. These activities are done on Shabbos. Tchinas and v'harkadas ain't a dochas a Shabbos. However, the grinding of the flour, the sifting of the flour is not done on Shabbos. And here we get to a classic line of the Mishnah, which we heard already numerous times throughout Shas. And that is, Klal Amar Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva gives us one of his most basic rules, and that is, Kol Melacha Shef Shal Asos Amer Shabbos, if there's something that I could have done before Shabbos, in a Dochas HaShabbos is not going to override the Shabbos. Ushiev Shal Asos Amer Shabbos, and if it cannot have been done before Shabbos, meaning the only time you could have done it on Shabbos itself, Dochas HaShabbos is going to override the Shabbos. And so, by the 19th parak of Shabbos, Rabbi Elazar de Mila, so there we saw very clearly, same idea of Rabbi Akiva, that, in other words, even though we know that if the eighth day of the newborn is coming out on Shabbos, so the Mila is going to be overriding Shabbos. What aspect of the Mila? Only the aspects that you could not have done before Shabbos, meaning the actual Mila itself, and any of the other activities that can only be done on Shabbos proper. But any of the preparatory things that could have been done before Shabbos have to be done before Shabbos and cannot be done on Shabbos proper. Good. Same thing over here. In terms of the baking of the Minchas Chavitin, those activities that could be done beforehand, grinding, sifting, have to be done beforehand. Those activities that are done on that can be done beforehand, the kneading and the arranging and the baking have to be done on Shabbos. You'll ask, how come the kneading can't be done before Shabbos? So Rashi addresses that. And Rashi says, because we know that the kneading and the arranging and the baking are all done in a Kli Sharis. And again, if we were to do that before Shabbos, so that means that once it goes into a Kli Sharis, it's invested with Kedushas Aguf. With the investment of Kedushas Aguf, so what happens if it spends overnight? Becomes disqualified through Lina.
These are the activities like Hadchila. What happens with the event? For example, if you haven't done it on Friday, happens? You cannot go ahead and do it?
That's an excellent question. I'm not sure of the answer. Kol ha-menachos yesh ben ma'isa kli b'fnim ba'in by ma'isa kli b'chutz. Menachos in general are to be done inside the Azara, not outside of the Azara, meaning that the menachos in general are prepared in the Kli Sharis and therefore to be prepared inside. The Kli Sharis are not taken out of the Azara. The Kli Sharis remain in the Azara, and so therefore the preparation of menachos in general are done in the Azara. Shtei Alechem. And now we're going to be speaking specifically about the dimensions of these loaves. When I say these, I'm speaking now about the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim. And the Gemara and the Mishnah now is going to be giving us very specifics regarding the dimensions. So we start with the Shtei Alechem, the two loaves of Shavuos. Arkan Shiva Tfachim, V'rachvan Dal Tfachim, V'karnasel Arba Etzpaos. So when it comes to the Shtei Alechem, so the length is going to be 7 Tfachim. The width is going to be 4 Tfachim. And then the Kronos and then the horns. Okay, a picture over here is worth 1,000 words. If you have an art school Gemara in front of you, you'll see a picture. It's either way. I'm fine. I got it. I know. This one, I know what it looks like. So a picture is worth 1,000 words. If you see a picture of the Lechem Aponim, so in other words, we're not talking about the Lechem Aponim right now. We're talking about the Shtei Alechem. But in other words, in terms of the horns, the configuration is the same. In other words, basically what there were dough protrusions coming out of the four corners of the Shtei Alechem. The Mishnah describes this as the karnayim, the horns of the Shtei Alechem. And so those dimensions are measured in its post, meaning they're just small protrusions. So we have for the Shtei Alechem the dimensions of being 7, 4, 4. 7 tfachim length, 4 tfachim width, and 4 etzbaos for the karanos. Now we move on to the Lechem Aponim. Now the Lechem Aponim, Archem, Yutfachim, Verachman, Heitfachim, Vekarnoseh, Sheva, Etzbaos. So the dimensions of the Lechem Aponim are going to be 10 by 5 by 7. But remember, 10 is the length, 5 is the width, that's measured in tfachim, and the kronos are 7, but 7 etzbaos. Typically, there are 4 etzbaos in a tefach, so it's basically just a shade under 2 tfachim for the horns. But in other words, we're measuring in etzbaos, so it's 10, 5, and 7. Rav Yehuda Omer Shalot Tite. Now, Rav Yehuda says, now you want to remember this well, so I'm going to give you a mnemonic. Now, we know Rav Yehuda likes giving mnemonics. We know it by the Haggadah, by the Seder. Rav Yehuda Hayinosim Bem Simanim. You want to remember the Aseres Adibros? So, Detzach Adash Ba'achav. So, that's the mnemonics that he gives in the Seder. Here as well. He gives the mnemonics to help us remember the dimensions of the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim. Zadad Yahaz. Zadad, that's the Shtei Alechem. That's 744, like we described just a couple moments ago. The 1057 of the Lechem Aponim we just described also a moment ago. Ben Zoma Omer v'nasata l'ashulchan lechem aponim lefanai tamid. Ben Zoma now is going to explain the words lechem aponim. One of the most basic questions that we haven't asked yet, but the Mishnah here discusses it right now. The lechem aponim, it's a strange name it's being described as. Translated literally, the bread of faces. What does that mean, lechem aponim? So Ben Zoma goes on to explain lechem panim she'elo panim. So Ben Zoma gives an explanation, although the explanation really begs an explanation. Mm-hmm. He says that the lechem apanim she'yelo panim, so that it has faces. Great. What does that mean? So Rashi over here offers two explanations of what that means. So Rashi first and foremost explains that the word over here means defanos, meaning that the lechem apanim is going to be multifaceted. It's going to have sides to it, as we're going to learn in just a moment. The lechem apanim was 10 by 5, but we're not really done yet. Because what happens is that along its length, it's going to be folded up on both of its ends. So it's really going to be facing in many directions. It'll be facing down, it'll be facing up, it'll be facing to the sides. It is a multifaceted bread. That's Rashi's first explanation of Ben Zoma. His second explanation, Lishna Achrina, She'elo Penim Zavios, Vehenena Kronos. They're going to have corners, horns protruding. Not physical horns, but in other words, little protrusions coming out of the four corners, and that is another possibility of what Ben Zoma meant when he said the word Penim. Okay. And now, we have already given the dimensions of the bread, and that is going to be fixed. That's not going to change. But now we're going to talk about how the bread fits on the table. And oddly enough, if you have not heard this ever before, it's going to sound strange, the dimensions of the table are not fixed. Now, how is that? How did that happen? So basically, it goes like this. The Torah gives a description of the dimensions of the table, and the Torah's dimensions of the table, length by width, is 2 amas by 1 amma. That's great. So what are we debating about? So what we're debating about is the following. We know that generally speaking, an amma is 6 tfachim. And throughout most of halacha, most of the areas of halacha, so we assume that an amma is 6 tfachim. However, there is a major debate amongst the Tanaim that when measuring the clay hamikdash, are we using an amma that's 6 tfachim, or are we using an amma of 5 tfachim? And the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, which we're going to see in just a moment, is that that in the Beis HaMikdash, an amma is not 6 tfachim, but rather 5 tfachim. That means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the dimensions of the table, which the Torah tells us, is 2 by 1 ammas, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is now going to be 10 by 5 tfachim. And so now, his table is, quite frankly, smaller. Rabbi Meir, on the other hand, who consistently says that the amma is always 6 tfachim, so that means that according to Rabbi Meir, the table is now 6 by 12, a larger table. The dimensions of the bread that we already gave, that is unchanging because we measured it in tfachim. So in other words, we know the bread is always going to be 5 by 10. How big is the table? So now it's going to be based on these two positions. And so now, how do the bread fit on the table? So we now know that the measurement of the table is going to be based on two positions. And so now let's watch as the Mishnah basically walks us through how the lechem is fitting on the table. Hashulchan. So as far as the table is concerned, now remember, there are going to be two opinions, so we are starting the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Hashulchan arko yud v'rachva chamisha lechem apanim arko yud v'rachva hei. So what happens is that the table is 10 by 5, now the lechem apanim is 10 by 5. But now, follow carefully. Nosna archa keneged rachva shulchan. So what we're going to do is we're going to take the length of the lechem apanim and we're going to put it along the width of the table. Now, if you have a good picture in your head of what we're doing right now, so you realize that there's going to be lechem apanim extending on one side of the table and the other, because we're not laying it along the length of the table, we're laying it along the width of the table. How much is extending on each side? Well, that's easy. In other words, there are 10 tfachim of length of the lechem apanim. The table, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is only 5. So that means now that there is 5 extending. But 5 extending, meaning it's 2.5 on each side. And so what we're going to do with the 2.5 now is we're going to bend it upwards. So that's going to be a 90-degree bracket on the two ends. And the Mishnah goes on to describe. Notice in Arko Keneged Rachva Shoshochem V'Kofel Tvachayim U'Mechza Mikan U'Tvachayim U'Mechza Mikan Nimsa Arko Memalei Rachva Shoshochem Divrev Yehuda. And now what comes out is that in doing what we just described by bending the 2.5 Tvachim on each side, so we're going to now have the Lechem upon him filling the entire table. Because remember now, we have 2 lechem apanim resting on the table. And being that the width of the lechem apanim is both 5, and the entire length of the table is 10, so we have the entire table covered now with lechem apanim, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir Omer, and Rabbi Meir disagrees. And the point of the disagreement, as we already explained, is going to be the dimensions of the table. Rabbi Meir Omer, Shulchan Archa Yud Beis V'Rechva Vav. So he starts off with the table being 12 by 6. And again, I already explained earlier how his table is a larger table. Lechem apanim archo yud v'rachvo hei. Now the dimensions of the lechem apanim has not changed. It's still 10 by 5. So, but what he's going to do now is the same thing that Rabbi Meir did. Sorry. The same thing that Rabbi Yehuda did in terms of laying the length of the lechem apanim along the width of the table. And now he's going to fold upwards. But because now the width of the table is longer, so that means that less protruding on each side, So that means that when he folds upward, it's only going to be two going up on each side. And he goes on to explain exactly what I just said. So the Yud Beis Verach Lechem Apanim Archo Yud Verach Vohei. Notice that Archo Kenegu Rav Rosh Hashochan Kofo Tvachai Mikan Tvachai Mikan U'Tvachai Revach Be'emtza. And so now, two going up on each side, and also, as the Lechem Apanim are sitting side by side now on the table, so you hopefully have now realized that there actually is a two Tefach space between the two Lechem Apanim. Because again, the Lechem Apanim are only five Tvachim wide, and according to Rabbi Meir, the table is 12 Tvachim long. So that means now that, assuming that the Lechem Apanim are put at the ends of the table, so there's a two tefach airspace between the two lechem upon him. And why? So that means that there's now going to be circulation. Circulation so that the bread remains fresh. Now the idea of the bread remaining fresh obviously is miraculous. Even with the circulation, leave out bread for a week and see what happens. So admittedly, in other words, the circulation helps the bread remaining fresh. But obviously it is the circulation plus nace that allows for bread to remain fresh for the entire week. Now Abishal is of the opinion that you know what we do with that little two tefach space between the two columns of the loaves? So that's where we're going to take the bezichin, the two spoonfuls of lavon, and place them over there. Amru lo, so they say to Abishal, nothing doing. The Torah gives a very clear description. Where do I put the Levona Zakah, the frankincense? I put it al hama'areches. I put it on top of the columns. So the Chachamim say to Abishau that it goes not between the columns, but on top. Like, know your prepositions. So Amar Lahem Arekvar Namar. So Abishau says in defense of his own position, I do know my prepositions. The word al means on top, but it comes out that al also means next to. I'll give you an example. The alav mateh menashe. Going back to the second parak of Bamidbar, second day in a row that we are in the second parak of Bamidbar. So we talk about the encampment of Bnei Yisrael. So of the Ephraim section, meaning four quadrants, of the Ephraim section, so alav mateh menashe, so Menashe was next to him. The Torah uses the word alav. Certainly over there does not mean on top of, it means next to, within proximity. But you see that the word alav could mean on top, but it could also mean next to.
So you're referring to Rabbi Yehuda, you'd be missing two faces to touch it. You're supposed to see faces.
Okay. I mean, you're right. Arba snipim shel zav ayusham. Mefutzalim arashem shayusamchem hem shnayim l'seder zeh v'shnayim l'seder zeh. The side supports. There were side supports that ran along the side of the table and which provided support for the Lechem Aponim. We described them in yesterday's daf in greater detail. The Chavches Kanim Kechatzi Kanechalul Arba'asal L'Seder Zeh V'Yudal L'Seder Zeh. And now there were also rods. Half rods, meaning split along its long side. So they were circular but semicircular, and they were fitting underneath the loaves. Basically, three rods under every loaf, but that's not an absolute. We'll discuss the configuration of the rods in more detail, I think, in tomorrow's daf. But in other words, 14 for one column, 14 for the other column, 28 in total. Lo sidur kanim v'lo netilasam dochas haShabbos. Interestingly, the Mishnah says that the putting of the setting up of the rods cannot override the Shabbos. So now if the setting up of the rods is not going to override the Shabbos, so how do we do it? How do we take the bread off and put the new bread on if we are not going to be setting up the rods on Shabbos itself? So the Mishnah actually walks us through. Here's exactly how it's going to be. Now, why isn't it? Why aren't they going to be overriding the Shabbos? So the...
Aren't they there all the time? Why are we concerned about it?
Stay tuned for that. We're going to discuss that as well. So we'll discuss. Ela nichnas me'erev Shabbos. So what happens now is that on Erev Shabbos, so the Kohanim are going to go in, vishamto, take the rods out, ally them along the table, not on the table, there's no room on the table, but line them alongside the table. And then the last point of the Mishnah is that in terms of the Kelim in the Beis HaMikdash, now consider, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Heichal, so what was the furniture? Three pieces of furniture. I'm using, you know, obviously, not to be taken literally, but in other words, three Kelim in the Heichal. The Menorah, the Shulchan, and the Mizbech HaZav. Now, as far as the Mizbech HaZav is concerned, so it's a square. So it's really not fair to talk about in terms of length and width. It's a square, right? Length equals width. Good. So, but when talking about the menorah and talking about the shulchan, so there's a length and there's a width. So should the length go along the east-west plane or should it go along the north-south plane? So the Mishnah over here takes a really clear position. And that is that the length of the menorah and the length of the shulchan should be parallel with the length of the heichal. So the long side of the menorah follows the long side of the heichal. And the same thing is true regarding the shulchan as well. Now, what about the aron? So the Mishnah is not discussing the aron. In terms of the configuration of the aron, so if you have a good picture of the heichal in your head, so you know that the aron is following a north-south orientation, meaning its length, and not an east-west. So over here, the Mishnah presumably is only talking about the shulchan and the menorah, and not the aron. Again, more about that later. So our Mishnah says that they're east-west.
In terms of our show, offering two explanations for Al, what support does he have to accept that Al is next to rather than above? There are two explanations.
He gives an example. Okay.
But what is the support that in this case this is next to?
A.
Yes, his own.
Could be his Messiah. Kol menachos yesh by ma'isa kli b'bifnim. In general, the menachos have to be prepared inside. Shalos Rabbi Zumanayin, how do I know this? Amalam Harei Omer. Vayomer Laizem Akomashir Yivashlu Shama Kohanim. Now, the pasuk we have, just a small editing, as Hashem Vesachatas, Asher Yofu Asamincha Levoti Otsi Asachatzer Chitzona. So in the pasuk in Yecheskel, a description of various carbonates that are prepared. And you'll notice in this pasuk we have juxtaposed carbon chatzis, carbon asham, right alongside the carbon mincha. Now, granted, they're all fall under the category of Kaddish Kadashim, but the Gemara understands that the reason why they're connected is for the following. Mincha dom yada asham v'chatas, ma asham v'chatas tunim kli, av mincha nami tunim kli. So just like the chatas and asham requires a kli, so too the mincha also requires a kli, meaning kli shares. And again, I go back to what I said earlier. Kli shares is not taken out of the azara. So that means that it has to be prepared in the azara. Hashulchan arko asara, amar rav yochan ledivrei omer tfachem amechza kofel, nimsa shulchan mekadesh chamisha asar tfachem lamala. Ledivrei omer tfachem kofel, nimsa shulchan mekadesh yud beis tfachem lamala. Rav Yochanan over here is going to turn into our accountant of the day. And that is just a simple accounting of the total height. The breads are stacked one on top of another, six high on each column. What is the height? So we already know, based on the Mishnah we just learned together, it's going to be a machlokus, the height, because how much of it gets folded over at the ends? It's either going to be 2.5 or 2. So what you do now is very simple. You take the six loaves, and you're going to multiply it by, well, it depends who you hold like. If you hold like Rav Yehuda, you're multiplying it by 2.5. That gets you to a height of 15 tefachim. If you are Rebbe Meir, you're multiplying it by 2, so that means it's going to be 6 times 2 is 12. It's going to be 12 tefachim high. And so the Gemara says, so that means to say now that the Shulchan is going to be able to be Mekadesh, depending on who you hold like, either 15 above the table surface or 12 above the table surface. The Gemara is bothered because what Rabbi Yochanan doesn't seem to account for in his accounting is the total height. Because it's not just that the loaves are stacked one on top of another, as we learned already, there are rods placed between each one of the loaves. And isn't that going to add to the height? Va'ika kanim, kanim shakui mishakilahu. So the Gemara says, well, you know when the bread is put on the kanim, so the bread is soft, and I know it's matzah, but soft matzah, and what the bread does is that the bread sinks a little bit into the kanim. So that means that the kanim don't add to the height. The Gemara says, wait 1 second. I don't hear that. So the Gemara says, do you know why the kanim are there? Once again, circulation. So that air can go between the breads. And so that the breads don't get moldy or stale. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. If the whole point was to provide circulation, and now you're telling me that the bread is sinking into the rods, so what was the point of the rods? So the Gemara says, Lechem de Magbalei Porta. So the Gemara says, well, just a sliver of airspace is in fact created between the loaves of bread. So the Gemara says, okay, Vayiko Porta. So the Gemara says, okay, let's not ignore it then. If there's a sliver of airspace between, so those airspaces add up. And so, again, when Rav Yochanan is giving us the numbers of either 12 or 15, he's ignoring these airspaces. And the Gemara basically says that is correct. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what, though? Those airspaces don't amount to a tefach. Rav Yochanan was talking only in units of tefach. Now the Gemara says, now what about the two spoonfuls of Lavona? Which according to one opinion, which we learned back in the Mishnah, they're actually situated on the lechem upon him. So when accounting for the full height above the table, so aren't you ignoring the bezichin? So the Gemara says, "Begavei de lechem have a yasve, u lebehade lechem have a kaime." So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know where the bezichin were? They were placed in the top loaf. And I mean that literally, in the top loaf. Because as we've now been discussing the shape of the loaves, so we know that every loaf has an interior, including the top loaf. So the top loaf now has an interior. The bezichin are sitting in the top loaf, as long as you're assuming that they're sitting on the loaves. And so therefore, they don't contribute to the height. Vayika kranos. Now the Gemara says, what about the horn protrusions? So again, so you and I are looking at the picture, so we already know the answer the Gemara is going to give us. The horns did not protrude up, but rather the horns protruded inward. Top of Tzadi Vav Amud Beis. Vayika Mizgarto. Now, what about the frame of the table? And so now, for the rest of the daf today, we're going to be discussing the frame of the table. We know clearly that the Torah gives a description of a frame surrounding the table. Here's the part that we are unsure about, and as we're going to see in just a moment, subject to a machlokus here in our Gemara in Tzadi Vav Amud Beis. And that is, this frame that the Torah describes, we know it's a tefach. Is it a frame that goes above the surface area of the table? Or is it basically serve as a frame like a skirt going around the table, but not going above the surface area of the table? And so what we're going to see now for the rest of today's daf is that subject to a machlokas. So the Gemara says, Vayika maskarto, what about the frame? Kamandam miskarto lamata haisa. So the Gemara says, first of all, if the frame is in fact below the table, serving as like a skirt around the table, so then problem solved. Meaning, why aren't we factoring that frame in terms of the height? And the answer is because it doesn't contribute to the height. It's not there above the table, above the surface area of the table. It's below the surface area of the table. So good. So it doesn't contribute to the height. Good. And ulaman damar mizgarto lamala haisa. And even if you're going to argue that the frame is above the surface area of the table, it also is not going to contribute to the height. Because if you subscribe to the idea that the frame is above the surface area of the table, the frame is not interior to the table, but the frame is around the table. In fact, you know what the frame is serving as its function? It actually is framing the bread, meaning it is the support system for the bread. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Haisa perkude hava miparkada. V'lechem begavei deshulchan hava. Actually, the bread is now in the frame. Yosef Kidatanya, the Gemara here quotes a brisa. Rabbi Yossi Amar Lo Hayisham Snipim. According to Rabbi Yossi, there were no side supports. Now, I know for a good part of today and yesterday's daf, we talked about the side supports, but according to Rabbi Yossi, they didn't exist. So, Ela Miskarto Shulchan Ma'amedes Es Alechem. In fact, it was the frame that surrounded that provided support. Now, granted, by the way, it is physically different. Meaning the side supports, as we described it, is going all the way up the column. If you're just looking at the frame is only one tefach. Okay, but I guess Rabbi Yossi would say that that's enough support. That's a good question. I don't know. Amr lo miskarto lamata isa. And they say to Rabbi Yossi, no, we disagree. The frame is not above, the frame is below. But anyway, you see in this brisa that, according to Rabbi Yossi, even if you subscribe to the idea the frame is above, but it's still not going to contribute to the height, because it's not interior to the surface area, it goes around the table. Amar of Yochanan. Okay. Now, for the rest of today's daf, we're going to talk a little bit about Tuma Tahara, and so just a really brief introduction. We're talking about wood over here. The table was made out of wood. Now, the table's plated with gold, And so I'll reserve that part of the discussion for tomorrow's daf. Mm-hmm. Good. So right now, let's just look at the table as being wood. Now, in terms of Tum and Tahara, what do we know regarding wood? Wood is Mekabel Tumah, but the wood has to have a tochen, has to have an interior. Pshutei Kli Eitz. Wood that is a table, right? Well, it happens to be right here. For show and tell today, I brought a table. So wood that does not have an interior is not going to be Mekabel Tumah. Now, I say that very flatly, and I say that as if there's no exceptions to the rule. But hopefully you know, long enough, you've been here long enough, you know that even with every rule, there are exceptions. And so a table may qualify as an exception, as we're about to learn together right now. Amar Rav Yochanan, divrei amar miskartola mata haisa, tavla misapeches tameya. Now, if the frame is below the table, now it happens to be that we have a table in front of us with no frame. No frame going up, no frame going below. So this table is just simply a flat plate piece of wood. Good. If the frame is below the table, so now that means to say that the table of the Beis HaMikdash did not have a toch. Okay. Meaning the frame was just simply ornamental. It was just basically like a skirt around.
Frame is the crown.
No. The crown? No. No. The frame is what I'm describing right now. Yeah. Okay. So the frame is now just simply it's just simply ornamental. So that means that the table is just simply a flat piece of wood. Good. Now, an assumption going into this, which the Gemara is assuming, and I'll give it away right now, is that the Shulchan of the Beis HaMikdash is in fact Mekabel Tumah. It's susceptible to Tumah. How do I know that? We'll see the Pesukim later. But right now, let's just simply say we know that. So now, if the frame is below, so that means that effectively, essentially, what the table is just simply a flat piece of wood. And what Rav Yochanan now is teaching us, our second Rav Yochanan of today, is that here's what we get to learn together. That even though the table is just a flat piece of wood, and even though it does not have a toch, and even though it's made out of wood, so it's still, what we're learning together, is a new concept referred to as, right, tavla hamisapeches. Because the table is functional, I could use this side, I could flip it over, I could use the other side. Because the table is a functional piece of wood, even though it doesn't have a toch, it serves as an exception to the rule. A flat piece of wood is not Mekabel Tumah unless it's a tavla hamisapeches. If it's something where I could use this side, I could use the other side, it's a functional table, it's going to be Mekabel Tumah. That's what we learn now, says Rav Yochanan. And Ledivrei Amar Miskarta Lamata Haisa. Now, if the frame is above, so now what are we looking at right now? We're looking at Napshute Kliates. We're looking at a wood keli with a toch. And so if that's the case, so now on the question of whether a flat piece of wood, which is serviceable on both sides, is or is not going to be Mekabel Tumah, I no longer can use the table in the Beis HaMikdash as a case study. Tavla Mesapeches Tibaylach. I'm going to ask the question and I won't know the answer. Mechlal Deshulchan Bar Kibul Leitumahu. Now the Gemara says, now, you know, we've been assuming this whole time that the Shulchan is in fact Mekabel Tumah. To which the Gemara says, and that's right. The Shulchan is Mekabel Tumah. Kli Eitz Asur L'Nachas, Suvichol Kli Eitz Asur L'Nachas Ein Mekabel Tumah. Now the Gemara says, I don't understand. Isn't it a fixture in the Beis HaMikdash? And we know that fixtures are not Mekabel Tumah. Now why are fixtures, I say fixture, I mean, we have no intent on moving it. We have no plan on moving it. Now why should it be that a fixture is not Mekabel Tumah? My time, Adumi Desak Be'inan. Because in order for a Kli Eitz to be Mekabel Tumah, it has to have the quality of a sack, which is Masak Metalta Malavirekan, Afkom Metalta Malavirekan. That anything that is movable is going to be Mekabel Tumah, and anything which is not movable. And when I say not movable, I don't mean that it's so heavy I can't move it. It simply means that we put it down over here and we have no plans on moving it. A fixture. So if it's something which we don't plan on moving, it's not going to be Mekabel Tumah. So the Gemara says, and we've heard this before, Shulchanami metalta malavirekan. So the Gemara says, no. The table, although most of the time sat in one place, we did move it. And that is kedereish lakish dam, reish lakish ma'idichtiv al shulchanat tahor. The Pasuk in Vayikra describes the Shulchan as being something which is tahor. It's pure, meaning it could become tameh. Tahor mechlal de'ika tameh. Ela malami shemagbin oso la'ole regalim. And what they would do periodically, specifically, at the time of Aliyah L'Regel, is that they would lift it up, umarin bo lechem, and they would show it to the Jewish people. Now, it's not clear in our Gemara where they would take it when they picked it up. Would they take it all the way out of the Heichal? Would they take it into the Azara? There's a Rashi in Yuma, which it's not perfectly clear where exactly they would take it. But for our purposes right now, there's one singular point that we just need to know, and that is they picked it up and they moved it. And because they did so, and they showed it to the Jewish people, and they said, "Va'omrim lahem, ruchi baskam lifnei amakam. See how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Kedivrei Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi." And I will add to that the point of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Damar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi neis gadol na'aseh b'lechem apanim. A miracle takes place regarding the lechem apanim. See luko k'si duro, that it comes off the table just like it went onto the table. So in other words, there is suspended time while the bread is on the table. So even though it sits there for a week, as far as the lechem is concerned, it's not a week. Okay, it's right, time being relative. So shenamar lasom lechem chom b'yom hilakho. The pasuk in Shmuel describes that the bread is hot, it's when it's taken off, even though it's been sitting on there for a week. It goes onto the table hot, it comes off the table hot. Interesting, Tosos over here writes, all right, the small Tosos on the bottom of the second to last Tosos. So Tosos over here posits that I only subscribe to this viewpoint if we're baking the lechem upon him on Shabbos. So that means it's going onto the table hot. But if I subscribe to the viewpoint that we're baking the lechem upon him on Friday, so that means that it's been sitting around for a day before it goes on the Shulchan, and Tosos said, therefore says it doesn't go on hot, and so it's not going to, the Shulchan's not going to heat up the bread. Anyway, interesting position. But anyway, the point is that we do pick up the table, and so therefore it is not a fixture, and that's why it's going to be Mekabel Tumah. So what do we have right now at the end of today's daf? A question of the frame, whether it goes above or below the surface area of the table. If it goes below, it certainly doesn't contribute to the height. Even if it goes above, it doesn't contribute to the height because it goes around the bread. It's not interior to the surface area. And then a couple of Tumah and Tahara points. One point that we learned together is that if the frame goes below, so that means the table is just basically a flat surface area. It's made out of wood, it's Mekabel Tumah. So then we can learn a new halach in Tumah Tahara, and that is the idea of Tavla HaMisapeches. Even though it doesn't have a toch, but because it's so large and it's so functional, so therefore it's Mekabel Tumah. If, however, the frame goes above, so now it's a classic Kli Eitz with a toch, and so therefore I can't learn out anything regarding this principle of Tavla Misapeches. What about the fact that it's a fixture? And so to say the Gemara nice and succinct, it's not a fixture. Occasionally the table's picked up and brought out and shown to the Jewish people, and so therefore it's not a fixture, and that's why it is subject to Kabbalah Sotumah. Had it been a fixture, so then it would not be Mekabel Tumah.